This is Bold Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bold Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
This is Donna Anselmo at Bold Talk Business Radio and our maiden voyage on TNR, that's talknetworkradio.com, where Jeff Heiser, who is a really nice person, I think maybe a really, really nice person, has made it possible for us to be broadcasting here today and getting out across the internet with our business success and space talk segments. Today, we're going to be talking space talk with our special space journalist, Jason Ryan, who is our correspondent today. We've got Pete Anselmo in the studio with us as co-host, as usual. And I just want to give you a little bit of an insight to what Bold Talk Business Radio is and has been about. We're a show that developed to bring insight, strategies, tips, and tools for success to business professionals, to job seekers, to business owners and business leaders. And we bring guest experts onto the show every week to share their insight and share their expertise with our listeners. We broadcast from the Space Coast of Florida, and we are thrilled to be able to be engaged with people who love space as an industry and who are so excited about what space flight and space exploration means for humanity and even means for the economy and for the nation and for national pride and for all those good things. And Jason Ryan, who is our special correspondent today, is the founding editor of Spaceflight Insider, which is an amazing online journal about everything you can think of that's happening in the space world. Pete Anselmo, who's with us today, is going to lead our discussion today on Space Talk along with Jason Ryan. And we're going to be bringing you in future weeks other space experts, and Jason is going to be co-hosting with us in the future. So well, normally, thanks for being with us.
Normally we're talking, we're watching launches and observing and commenting on launches. But today, we're launching Space Talk Radio, and it's my great pleasure to have with us Jason Ryan from SpaceflightInsider.com, and today we'll be talking about space, and we're going to review for our listeners some of the upcoming launches, some of the current events that are happening in the aerospace industry, and try to cover a lot of ground in a limited amount of time. So, Jason, are you there? Are you ready to launch here today?
Ooh, you're going to use rocket puns. Okay, yeah, I guess.
We're down with puns.
Candle. Yeah, let's light this candle. What you got for me?
Well, what I was wondering about is, are some of the upcoming launches that are happening. Can you give us a little overview? I know there's one coming up. I believe it's Thursday morning, Friday a.m., and then another early in September.
Yeah, a.m. I'm glad you said that. That would be the launch of the Air Force Space 6 mission, GSSAP, the launch from atop a United Launch Alliance Delta IV Medium Plus 4-2 rocket from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station's Space Launch Complex 37 in Florida. And it'll be exactly the opening of the AM, and yes, folks, that means at midnight, and United Launch Alliance will essentially have about 4 hours to get the rocket off the pad and into the very dark and early skies above the Space Coast. Now, there's not a lot of information on this mission. We know that it's two geosynchronous space situational awareness program satellites, and they'll basically be used to seek out threats across the globe, both physical, you know, threats and probably, as we're starting to see, like a situation in Turkey and elsewhere, potential political ones. So surveillance satellites, essentially. Now, this version of the Delta IV Medium has a 4-meter fairing, and it is powered by two Orbital ATK GEM 60 solid rocket motors that are attached to the first stage of the rocket. The Delta IV is not flown quite as much as the Atlas or the Falcon 9, but it is a regular customer at Cape Canaveral.
Very good. And then we have the Orbital ATK launch that's coming up in September. I think that's really the more interesting of the launches. Just as a question that I had, It listed as the Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport.
Yes, that is correct.
And just what is that?
Well, that's a great question. That's a pretty exciting mission for lots of space enthusiasts who are very much following the NASA's new commercial addiction. Orbital ATK and SpaceX are they both keep contracts under NASA to fly cargo, uncrewed cargo missions to the International Space Station. Now, Orbital ATK uses their Antares rocket out of Wallops Flight Facility, the space basically for Virginia Space's Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport, PAD OA. To the launch Antares, and Antares, of course, carries Cygnus. Now, for the last two missions that flew, the Cygnus missions that flew, they had a mishap in 2014, I believe it was, and the Orb 3 mission was lost just a few seconds into the flight. So they had to make sure they honored their agreement with NASA, and they bought a couple missions from United Launch Alliance on and out of five, both those missions, 084 and 086, and the sequencing of the missions obviously aren't working out. You had OA4, OA6, now it's OA5, but I'm not sure what's happening. I think Culbertson of Orbital ATK said, yeah, that's kind of a little boo-boo I made. But long story short, after the mishap, they said, look, these AJ-26 engines that Aerojet Rocketdyne sold us, they're 40 years old. We were told that they could work, but considering we just lost a vehicle and the spacecraft it carried, and they were already looking to replace the AJ-26 anyway, because there was a couple of, not a lot of information has been released on it, but there were a couple of accidents at Stennis Space Center's testing site when the engines were tested of the AJ-26. And these engines are like 40 years old, and they performed admirably for the first few flights, but obviously they had a lot of concerns in the industry, and then so Orbital ATK has moved over to the RD-181, I believe it is. There's going to be two of those in the first stage of the rocket. And so they're going to be, they're hoping to plan, right now they're planning, because they have to coordinate with not just SpaceX and Russia and Japan and Europe and everybody else who flies International Space Station, but also according to the needs of the ISS. So I think right now they're targeting the second half of September to mm-hmm. launch out of Wallops. And again, that's a pretty exciting mission, because it'll see a relatively new launch vehicle return to service.
Okay, what about the OSIRIS-REx project? Oh. How's that going to be? When is that going to launch?
OSIRIS-REx, or NASA's Origin Spectral Interpretation Resource Identification Security and Regular Explorer, say that five times fast, or OSIRIS-REx, as they think. Goodness, have acronymed it. It's currently planned to launch atop a very weird version of one of the most regularly flown boosters out of Cape Canaveral and also out of Vandenberg, the United Launch Alliance Atlas V. Now, the most common version of this rocket, 401 configuration. Make sure I get that correct. 401, which means it has a 4-meter fairing, it has a zero solid rocket boosters, and a single, what kind of engine is it? RL-10C2, I think it is. I get that nomenclature mixed up because so many different versions, but essentially a single engine in the second stage. Well, whenever you think of solid rocket engines, you always think of them in pairs or sets of two, because they're on opposite sides of the rocket. You don't want the boosters to be pushing the rocket one way or the other. You want it to go up. Well, this one's using a 411, which means it has a single booster on its first stage. And, yeah, that's very unique. We've never seen that. Well, I've never seen that in the 9-plus years that I've covered the space program. Now, the mission itself is kind of cool, because what it's going to be doing, it's going to be sending a probe to asteroid Bennu, or as this more mouthful referred to as, 101955 Bennu, or 1999 RQ-36. Now, it's actually going to send a spacecraft to an asteroid. It's going to go there, select a sample, and once the probe has it sampled, it's going to send that back to Earth for scientists to study and to geek out over.
It sounds like an awful lot of technology, and it's like the alphabet soup. I worked in the healthcare industry before I came down to Florida, and working in a hospital, everything is a constellation of alphabet letters and acronyms. But what I want to get to a little bit and let our listeners know is that this mission is about getting information back from space on the hurricane tropical cyclone tracking. Is that correct?
Oh, this is another mission that you're referring to, Cygnus, the, oh gosh. And yeah, you're not wrong.
I had a question, Jason, about if you have any information on the, I know that SpaceX tends to be very secretive about their launch schedule. So I'm just curious if, I know they're going to accelerate their launch schedule, but I'm just wondering if you have any information on what's going to take place.
Oh, for the remainder of the year, SpaceX is, now you're not going to hear them admit it like I am. Unfortunately, guys, my background makes me very blunt, very open and honest. I don't pull punches. This has been the year of SpaceX. 2016 is without a doubt been the year of SpaceX. And what we have is ULA is usually the workhorse out at Cape Canaveral, and they're, boom, launching once, twice, sometimes even more months, but usually about once a month. And that has totally inverted 2016. SpaceX is launching at the rate of about once a month. They've already launched 8 missions in 2016. The next one is September 3rd, set for September 3rd, and that's the AMO-6 communication satellite. And, okay. And then they got Iridium Next Flight 1 coming up in late September. Again, 2 flights in 1 month. And that's okay. But then they're looking at flying their cargo mission of CRS-10, their 11th overall flight to the I guess 11th overall flight to the ISS, I think in mid-November. But this, again, is kind of okay, but then they got some cool stuff coming down the line. They're going to have a Falcon 9 engine with only 3 rocket engines. Only 3 engines when the Falcon 9 normally has 9 in its first stage, and it's going to launch with a crew-rated Dragon spacecraft. Or we've heard Dragon V2, we've heard Dragon 2, we've heard Crew Dragon. Most of these days, SpaceX wants us to say Crew Dragon, so that's what I call it. It's going to be launched, and it's going to go high at the region of the atmosphere, which is known as maximum dynamic pressure, or max-Q, and it's going to encounter an anomaly. No, it's not really going to encounter an anomaly. It's going to be simulated to encounter an anomaly or problem in flight, and they're going to test out its in-flight abort system. Now, I'm kind of excited about this mission because it was supposed to be in Vandenberg. And although we would have people that are out there who can cover this, and that's great. We'd all been handled. We would have gear out there and everything. The fact that we're going to be doing it here is so much better because we have a lot more resources here and we can document it better, still video, all kinds of great stuff.
Oh, so, that'll be fun.
Yeah, and they also are going to be launching from Launch Complex 39A. You're saying, well, why is that a big deal? Well, because 39A is where the shuttles used to launch from. It's not their normal launch site at Space Launch Complex 40 Cape Canaveral. So it should be the first flight they conduct from 39A since they've taken it over under a 20-year lease from NASA. Now,
I wanted to ask you about, Jason?
Yeah, sure.
What is the status? I know they've been, collecting first-stage rockets. They're dropping them, and I'm not dropping them. They're landing them back and then storing them. So where do we stand with respect to them refurbishing the rockets and using them again? How does that stand?
Well, what we've been, again, like we have to put the caveat out there, everything I say is what information I can get my hands on, and it's not always the best when it comes to SpaceX. Sometimes you can ask questions and they just won't respond, and at other times they'll respond within a few minutes. You never know quite what you're going to get. So they have, like you said, quite a few of them, and they've come back in various states. They've come back looking great. They've come back, I think, in terms of JCSAT-14 mission, pretty rough. And what I've been understanding from my sources is that they're going to be using a JCSAT-14 first stage that's come back. And that is what comes back. The second stage does not return, just the rocket's first stage. That lands either out on the Of Course I Still Love You Autonomous Spaceport Drone Ship, or ASDS, again, another acronym for us to remember, or as it's done twice at Cape Canaveral's LZ-1, which used to be Space Launch Complex 13. And what they do is they go back, they've already tested out one of the engines, one of those stages at McGregor, and it's our understanding that they could fly, refly at first stage as soon as, like, next month or sometime this fall. That's what we're hearing.
Oh, that's excellent. That should be interesting. I had also some other questions I wanted to ask you, and it's really about what's happening with respect to the legalities of getting the back from outer space. In other words, who owns the material, and what is the situation with respect to regulation of materials in outer space? I read where Moon Express recently got regulatory approval to land and bring back. How does the legality, where does that stand?
Yeah, you know, Pete, you would think that once you go into outer space, you know, there's no atmosphere, it's filled with radiation, it's very harsh. You think you'd be able to escape the lawyers, wouldn't you? Nope. You can't kill a lawyer with no gravity, no oxygen, and even hard radiation, even in space. you gotta fight off the lawyers there too. And this stretches back to 1967 when the Outer Space Treaty was signed under with the United Nations. Now, in terms of Moon Express, they want to land on the moon, and that's under the Google Lunar X Prize that they're competing under. And I'm never really great with numbers, but I think that's if they can perform all the things that requirements are done under the GLXP, Google, that they'll get like $30 million.
Right.
Now, for them, that's kind of been eased up a little bit last year by President Obama when he signed I forget what the official title of the thing was, but essentially did it, actually, I see it right now, I believe it's the Commercial Space Launch Act. I could be mistaken on this, but essentially, if a company goes to, say, the moon, they have to ask permission first, and, you know, who's not going to do, not going to say no, you know, it's going to tell you no. I mean, so essentially, they're going to try to land on the moon. They'd land their MX-1E spacecraft there and, you know, win the Google Lunar X Prize. But they're not alone in this. There's a lot of companies that have been working to basically open space up for business purposes. Again, with numbers, I'm not that great, but I know for a fact that some of the asteroids that we see these, you know, pictures of these lifeless rocks in space, one of them is worth the entire gross domestic product of the entire Earth. And no, I'm not exaggerating. That's because of the minerals these things are made out of. They're nickel, they're aluminum, they're various forms of metals and minerals and resources that we can use. The moon, and this is something that is very contentious, but I kind of lean toward as being a possible resource, doesn't have the atmosphere that Earth does, and is bombarded since its formation by the sun. Now, what does this mean? Well, it's covered in this material called helium-3, a heavier form of the more common helium that we're all aware of that makes your voice go squeaky. And it's thought that this material could serve as a source of fusion energy, along with heavy hydrogen. Now, if that's the case, basically, it could solve our all of our energy issues. A lot of our energy issues. In fact, there was a movie called Moon. You can look it up. It stars Sam Rockwell, and he's basically a guy stuck on the moon. And they have all these robotic rovers that are going around and mining helium-3 from the moon. But these concepts are pretty much, you know, understood. We know how to get to these bodies, and President Obama's basically signed a law, a statement that says, look, if you go to these bodies, you collect these resources, they belong to the people who go and get them. So, and I have no problem with that at all. I think we went to space in the first place to be as we were scared of the Soviet Union, but I don't think we're quite in the Star Trek frame of mind. We're all noble, you know, we want to explore the final frontier and talk about the Prime Directive and how intelligent we are. I think we as a people, and I say that in the most general sense, have to have very primal, basic needs to do things. And space really hasn't had many of those after we went to the moon. And I think the companies that come back with all these resources, and they suddenly go from being worth, you know, hundreds of millions or maybe $1 billion to being, quartet trillionaires, it's going to totally change how we
I think what people underestimate in much of this is that it takes an incredible commitment of money and resources and time to get into the realm of where you can be productive in outer space. That takes a huge commitment.
Well, I mean, we talked about SpaceX earlier, and they're a perfect example. And I'm comfortable talking about SpaceX because in the beginning, the harshest person on SpaceX outside of, I don't know, people in Washington was me. Because I got into this business after we lost the crew of Columbia, and it's all about safety. And a lot of stuff that I saw in the beginning had me very concerned. But I think my sentiment on them has changed for multiple reasons because if you say you're going to do something, that means absolutely nothing to me. But if you say you're going to do something and then you do it one time, two times, three times, four times, five times, six times, you know what? You've shown that you can put your money where your mouth is and you're going to do what you say you're going to do. There are a lot of companies that come out here, Pete, and they make big, bold claims and they do absolutely nothing.
Well, no question. SpaceX is performing, so we have to give them the kudos for that. They are, they've said what they're going to do, and they've been doing it, so should be interesting, Donna.
Yeah, I just want to let our listeners know that you're listening to Bold Talk Business Radio, and today is our Space Talk segment. We love doing the Space Talk segments here, especially because we're based on the Space Coast. We're talking with Jason Ryan, who is the founding editor of Spaceflight Insider Journal, online journal, and we are with Pete Anselmo, who's really hosting today's segment on Space Talk.
Yes, we're just covering space and space adventures on the Space Coast.
And we're doing it today on the TNR network, which is the TalkNetworkRadio.com new way to listen to radio for the 21st century. And we're appreciative of our opportunity to be on the air today with Jeff Heiser.
Absolutely. This is our maiden voyage.
we're working through it.
Jason, one of the other areas that I thought we would talk about a little bit is the Next Step 2, which is NASA has given out, issued to a number of companies, six companies to be exact, to develop deep space prototypes for their habitats. And we're hoping that from that then leads to a probe that will go on the SLS and be used in the Adventures to Mars.
The Adventures to Mars. You know, how long have we been hearing that we're going to go to Mars? And, the thing with that is, we hear about NASA's journey to Mars, and that's kind of their branded Mars mission. I think that NASA's realizing that they actually have to have that branded mission because NASA really doesn't have a directive to do what it's working to do, but it's kind of been told, go ahead and do it. So what does that mean? Well, we have SLS. This massive new rocket that the space agency is hoping to launch on Exploration Mission 1 late in 2018, I think it is. And Orion, which has already flown one test flight in December of 2014, Exploration Flight Test 1, and I was there for that. That was pretty impressive. But what a lot of people don't seem to understand is that they say, behold, America, there's your spacecraft that's going to take you to Mars. And it's the Orion, and that is 195% totally, completely wrong. Orion is the spacecraft that is going to be getting the astronauts from the ground on Earth to a spaceship that is going to go to Mars. And then Orion is the spacecraft that's going to take that, whenever they come back, from low Earth orbit or in Earth orbit back to Earth. Now, there's a lot of in-between there.
Yeah, where do they fit in?
I'm glad you asked that. That's the world I was getting at. That the habitats are going to be used essentially from low Earth orbit all the way to Mars. And as you mentioned, the Bigelow Expandable, I forget what the
name is. Activity?
Thank you, Mod. Well, that's already on the ISS. They've expanded it. It worked. They had a hiccup with the first time they've ever tested space on the ISS. So, of course, they had a couple of hiccups when it first started. But essentially, yeah, they got it to work. And a lot of people were looking at this and saying, okay, now they're working on, NASA spent a lot of time getting the materials to get all the stuff out of Earth's gravity well into orbit. And now they're looking at, okay, how do we get to Mars? And they're looking at these expandable other types of habitats that, like Bigelow, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Orbital ATK, Sierra Nevada Corporation, and another probably lesser-known company called NanoRacks. That's a good deal. So this is good, really hard-working people over there. And they're going to be developing these prototypes. Now, you think about it, it's a six-month journey to Mars. We're estimating under current technologies, unless we develop warp drive, it's going to be 6 months. And there's a lot of stuff we have to figure out along the way to get people there. Now, once they get onto Mars, they got to have a place to stay. You don't have the Hilton at you know, Syria Plenum.
There's not a Holiday Inn there?
Yeah, there's no Motel 8, you know? I mean, you got to have a place to stay. And so they're going to be needing that as well. Now, once they get to Mars, they're going to need material to go from Martian orbit down to Earth and carry these HABs there too. So essentially, the HABs, we tend to focus on the spacecraft. We're used to Star Trek and the Millennium Falcon from Star Wars, but when it comes to that, we're light years away, no pun intended, but I know we like puns here. So we need to have systems in place that can keep the crew alive and healthy on that long journey to Mars. And that's what these HABs are there for. They could be used in future space stations, or they could be put on the moon, or, gosh, they can be used for so many other different purposes. It's just, it boggles the mind because there are so many destinations on Earth. Now, there's a lot of things that we have to think about here, too. It's like life support. You got to have environmental control, the ability for, if we have international partners, we have the ability to dock to it. Radiation mitigation, which is a big concern. Fire, safety, after that fire they had on Fear back in the 90s, big concern. And other crew health concerns. So there's a lot of stuff that needs to be kind of hammered out before these things are actually flown. So that's why these prototypes are being developed.
Well, that's interesting. And obviously they have a plan in mind, because recently the commercial crew docking port was established at the International Space Station. So now it's got a place or a home where some of these habitats may end up going and being tested in space, in addition to low Earth orbit training sessions. I know that Bigelow will be using their beam in low Earth orbit, and I think they're thinking about doing additional launches for other countries around the world to use their activity module to have astronauts from around the world to come and work in space.
Yeah, but essentially what we got going on there is you're almost talking about two different things. The International Docking Adapter, the first one launched on CRS-7 back in, I think, mid-2015, June 2015. It was roaring to orbit for about 139 seconds until the Falcon 9 blew, and it ended up at the bottom of the Atlantic. So Ida 2 launched on another SpaceX Falcon 9 and gave SpaceX a chance to get it right, and they did that with flying colors. And essentially, one of the things I think gets glossed over in terms of the ISS is there are 16 different member nations, and at least four different countries or country groups, the U.S., Europe, Japan, and Russia have launched spacecraft to it, but they got to have a universal type of adapting array to be able to all these spacecraft to differently, meet with different ports on the station. Now, if memory serves, Ida 2 will go where one of the old shuttle docking adapters was, or it'll be mated over it, which is where the adapter part of that nomenclature comes in. So it'll be. Made to build shuttle docking already there. So essentially, this is going to be used for Boeing CST-100 Starliner spacecraft, which is set to launch in, I think, its first flight in 2018, and SpaceX's crew-rated Dragon spacecraft under NASA's Commercial Crew Program.
Okay, so those are upcoming events that will dock at the International Space Station. One of the other areas we had on, we spoke with several weeks ago, Greg Cecil, who had written a book, Classroom Laboratory at the Edge of Space, Introduction to the Minikube Program. And what is interesting about that program is that it enables school children to discover about space and it's learn about space and to coordinate with STEM education programs throughout the country. And he has really pushed the envelope on the Minikube program. I noticed also that there's a push for CubeSats, cube satellites that are also being, these are now larger versions of the Minikube that are being launched by SpaceX and some of the other aerospace companies, Lockheed to be specific. Can you speak to that a little bit about the CubeSats?
Yeah, CubeSats are these really micro satellites that, we all remember, well, most of us remember the big economic crunch of 2008. And I think we really haven't come out of that. And yet we're still moving ahead with space efforts. Well, what that has kind of done is made all of us, and now that the new space community and commercial space efforts are really, you know, charging to the fore, be mindful of expenses, size, weight, and all that good stuff. So you can always do less. You can always do more. What they're trying to do is find ways to do more with less. I've seen CubeSats that have tape measures, metal tape measures. You know, you're looking out there, and there's a guy that's measuring the length of wood for your roof with that long metal tape measure, and he lets it go, and he cuts wood. But they're actually use those as the antenna for the satellites. I've seen them use cell phones and other devices. Now, Lockheed Martin isn't going to be doing that, but they are, all, of course, also involved in what is called, I think they're going to launch six. It's 6U Skyfire CubeSats, and that's going to fly, again, Exploration Mission 1, the first flight of the space launch, NASA Space Launch System, which is going to be used for the journey to Mars in 2018 and Orion spacecraft. Well, space these days, it's like... It's almost like the Indian on the plains where they've just taken down a buffalo. No part of that buffalo doesn't get used, but almost no part. I'm sure there are a couple, but they used everything. They had to, and they were wise. They were very frugal with the resources they had. That's kind of what space is becoming. So they're launching this huge rocket, and they're going to launch Orion around an orbit around the moon. It's circular lunar. I always get that word. I have a hard time with that word. But essentially, that's great, but you still got a lot of delta V thrust that's left over. And how do you use that? You just let it go to waste? No. So Lockheed Martin signed a contract with NASA to launch and deploy these Skyfire CubeSats during this mission. There's a lot of these little satellites that are being launched, and they're usually in low Earth orbit. But in this case, it won't be. They're, from what I understand, they're going to be in lunar orbit. And pretty exciting there. There are some concerns when it comes to CubeSats. As you know, there's been growing concern about the amount of things in space. We tend to think of space as vast, and, you know, there's just no way you could ever, run into anything out there, and that's totally incorrect. We've actually had an event just the past few months where a spacecraft was involved with an impact, what was called a debris-causing impact or debris event. And so I'm a little, from my personal standpoint, I'm a little concerned about launching 20, 30 satellites, these little CubeSats, which are great to educate children, but I'm a little worried about CubeSats and nanosats and microsats and, all the other, the corresponding debris that goes with them. So I'm a little concerned about this. It's one of the things that I think is we're very rightfully so being taking a second look at.
Okay, you think that there's a possibility that it'll create more of a debris problem and have more difficulty tracking what's out there?
Well, I don't think Lockheed Martin is going to do that. I know Lockheed Martin does. They're one of the founding members of the space age. I don't think they're Skyfire CubeSats are going to be any problem whatsoever. I think they're going to just give us enormous dividends and return on our investment. I'm talking more as a CubeSats and NanoSats and MicroSats as a whole. We've talked earlier about regulation, and I kind of think there needs to be a little bit of that in charge because we've all loved Sandra Bullock, and we thought she was great in Gravity. but if you remember what happened there, I mean, that's a totally Hollywood version of events. But to on a smaller scale, that's not wrong. That is a legitimate concern that those things could happen. And essentially, you know, all these the astronauts on the ISS, the missions to Mars, the Hubble Space Telescope, all this great, well, not about Hubble, but essentially, it puts all of that in jeopardy. Our the space age could come to an end if there's this, you know, 25,000 mile per hour, and I'm exaggerating probably a bit there, storm of razor sharp metal and glass and other materials that are circling the Earth every 90 minutes. It's something we need, that it needs to come from one of those deep seated back burner kind of concerns more to the forefront whenever we conduct launch. So, I don't really have a problem with training students and doing other projects like Skyfire. I just think that we need to start paying a little closer attention to that, because these events, these impact events, seem to be occurring a little bit sooner between each one. It used to be you hear one every few years, but now it's like almost every year you hear one or two, and I'm kind of concerned about that.
Okay.
Jason, I know you're a long-term space enthusiast. What do you think about, based on what you're telling me today, and you're talking about some of the ecological issues in space, what do you think is happening in terms of political consciousness and social awareness about what's going on in space? Do most people have any concept of what we're doing out there?
None whatsoever. I mean, they have a more deep appreciation of Kim Kardashian's rear end, or the cute little faces and obnoxious comments made by the Honey Boo Boo clan, than they do at all when it comes to space. One of the most terrifying things for me, one of the most soul-suckingly, depressingly, just devouring of joy things, is when I'm along Florida's Space Coast, and I'm not talking like way down north or south, but I'm talking in Titusville, and I'm sitting in a restaurant, and, you know, people see my shirt, or, you know, I'm looking at the video we just got from the launch site, and somebody says, well, what are you doing? I'm like, well, we just covered the launch, you know, and we're processing the content to get it on our site. And they said, oh, wow, we're still launching?
You know, yeah, you know, that's incredible.
I think that is because there was such a big focus on the shutdown of the shuttle program that people really thought that the space industry totally went away. And yet I look at your online journal, spaceflightinsider.com, and it's chock full of things happening in the space industry, but people are not aware of it. Now, you're a space journalist. What do you do about it, and how does that affect your own mission?
Permission to speak freely?
Absolutely. Granted.
Space journalists have failed, and I'm among them. The public, now, having said that, the public really doesn't care anymore. I mean, you know, during the shuttle era, for those of us that covered the shuttle, was incredible. It was amazing. It was just, gosh, I mean, it touched the soul of people who love space, because it was just so, just incredibly powerful to see that spacecraft and those astronauts go to orbit, and now it's gone. And but having said that, it was deadly dull. The only time the public paid attention to it was when something went wrong, and we failed. And we're doing a better job now. NASA's doing a better job with its NASA socials and its other outreach efforts. But you know, there are these new companies also are kind of creating a lot of buzz about space. Now, SpaceX is chief among them, but in all fairness to SpaceX, they do a very poor job of dealing with the media. That we go out there, we'll be given limited access to take images, stills, and video. There's tons of caveats, and, you know, we're professionals, so we make sure that we follow that to the letter. We understand that going out there is a privilege, and we really are appreciative of that. But SpaceX is very restrictive in what we can and can't do. And in some areas, everybody's different, but essentially in some areas that they're very good, some areas are very bad. But I spend my days staring at a monitor all day, and I'll read some of the comments from SpaceX fan boards. And there's one, we did a video a while back, and we do videos of all the launches. We try to. And the guy says, wow, this looks really great. It's so much better than ULA's. I guess it's because SpaceX gives more access. Well, I'm here to tell you, no, they do not. They give much less access. We can only set our cameras on the outside of the fence. And ULA, they let us go on the site and go all the way around the rocket. So we get amazing, and they'll also let us set up cameras up in other locations. United Launch Alliance does a superb job of allowing us to cover the space program. If I send ULA an email question, which that's, by the way, for your readers, your listeners, our name isn't about anyone on any of the 44 people or plus people that are on our team. That's our readers and our viewers, because we want to bring them inside. So we'll get questions all the time, and then we'll actually go to the press conferences, we'll go to the events, and we'll ask the people that can answer those questions, the viewers' questions. So,
well, I think I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I apologize. What I was going to say there is I read the people's questions about SpaceX, and there are some people that are very much knowledgeable, but the majority of the people just see the rocket go up, and it's exciting because they're landing and they're doing something that no one's done in the 60-plus, roughly 60 years of the space program or space age, and they don't understand it. And, that is our failing. I'll close with this because I tend to be a little bit long-winded about this subject, but I used to work with somebody, and his comment to me was, you need to use all the terminology, all the acronyms, the most precise speaking of you need to speak like an aerospace engineer. And I'm here to tell everyone listening to your program, that is the stupidest thing anyone could ever do.
Well, because, listen, I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your idea.
But long story short, there is, because the average public, they get up every day at 9, they got to go to their job and work 8, 9, God knows how many hours there, whatever it is, it has nothing to do with space. And maybe they just find it kind of cool and they want to find out about it. So they go to an article and they'll read it and they're hearing about JC-SAT-16 was inserted into GTO at T-plus 54. It burned through its delta V. You know what? I can do all the techno speak all day, all night. And you know what's going to happen? The public is going to look at that and they're going to say, that guy wants me to have an 8-year degree in aeronautical engineering. And they're going to go to another website.
Well, I think what we need to do is create for the public and let what you're saying sink in here. And this will be the format of our show, that we're going to bring to the public the interesting aspects of space, because it's an incredible project. And I think if we do it correctly, we can bring the interesting aspects of space to people and not have to get involved with the jargon and the detail in terms of the technical detail, unless the technical detail happens to be of significance. When you talk about certain things that are technical, obviously the details are important. So they'll just have to weather that. But I think we can do our part in bringing the exciting aspects of space. I don't think there's anything more exciting than developing habitats that people are going to live in outer space. I mean, it's amazing.
It's amazing, but it also, as I was listening to your news and views, Jason Ryan, on our Space Talk segment on Bold Talk Business Radio today, and listening to Pete Anselmo's commentary as well, my mind wandered to Maslow's hierarchy of needs as we're talking about what's happening and why people don't have an awareness of this. And if you remember the psychological constructs of that hierarchy, it was simple psychology that people are going to need to address their basic needs first. And you alluded to that earlier, and then their psychological needs, and then their self-fulfillment needs. But at the root of it, if you're not aware of something, you don't have any consciousness of it. So it is our goal, and I know it's your goal too, Jason Ryan, to raise awareness of what's happening in the space program and why it's important to people on so many levels. And if for no other reason, then it's really a part of our own human dynamic psychology that we are animals that are built to explore. We're built to solve problems. We're built to figure out new things, and we're built to overcome challenges. And there isn't a challenge that I can think of that's much bigger than figuring out what's happening in space and what the relationship is between us and that great beyond.
Yes, ma'am, I couldn't agree more.
And I think what's important also, especially now, is there was a time when initially space and space exploration was really for a very few people, a sort of an elite, you know, the astronauts and that. That's the way it was, that you looked at it and you said, well, okay, maybe they're going to send 5 or 10 people into space eventually or what have you. But what's interesting today is that all of these companies, the goal for many of them is to bring space travel to the average man. The average person is going to be permitted to get on some sort of a vehicle to go into low Earth orbit to circle the Earth. That's going to happen. And that the fact that we have here on the Space Coast a spaceport that is really developing and is happening, I think is terribly exciting. I think it's really the message that we have to bring in terms of this programming, is that what's happening here is happening for the average man. It's not just for the elites.
But, you know, as I listen to it, Pete, I think about the fact that space, and like anything else, any other area of life, space is a passion for some people. And it's just a blip on the radar, and for other people, and for some people, it's not even a blip on the radar. So we do have to do a better job of getting the word out about the space program, because I think it's important to the world in so many ways, and I've made that point before. What I want to talk about for just a moment on a personal level is, Jason, I remember meeting you for the first time at Space Shirts in Merritt Island, and the reason I bring it up is you were in there that day picking up some embroidered polo shirts, and we got to talking about space, and we got to talking about, you know, how we could work together, and eventually turned into radio segments together and me learning a lot about Spaceflight Insider and what a tremendous resource it is for people who are interested in space science and space exploration. But yesterday I happened to be back up at Space Shirts and I met an astronaut there, and it was really cool because there was John McBride in his full regalia, you know, flight suit with all the patches, and he was coming in to have another suit embroidered. And I just thought it was so cool to see somebody who is from the space program out and about, proud of what he's doing, being part of the Astronaut Encounter program at Kennedy Space Center. And it really just made me, just to have those few minutes of conversation with him, want to get out to KSC, want to know more about what's happening. And I had that moment of being starstruck with him, like, oh my gosh, I just met an astronaut. I don't even really know what to say to him. But he was like a human person. And we got to talking, and I found out he knew my brother-in-law, and they used to fly together for the Navy, and they were both involved in the political realm of the space program as well. So it was just kind of interesting to see that. And of course, I met him in the same place I met you, which I think is cool.
Well, I mean, I can't agree with you more there. I mean, I remember my first time when I met an astronaut, and I always thought that, and you will meet a very small, I think NASA makes sure that they, when they do their psychological profile, they look at how these people treat others. One of the things that I'm particularly proud of is I brag about my company, because I wasn't sure that I wanted to stay in the space industry after the closing shell. I was working with a small blog out of Texas, and eventually I got the opportunity to do this. And I wasn't sure I wanted to take that opportunity to make my own company. And so I looked at all the other groups, and I said, okay, well, they got this, and they got that. And they're all these little mom-and-pop type deals. And I said, I don't want that. I want us to be all that they have and a lot that they don't. So I started recruiting people, and I thought, well, okay, I would love to have some technical consultants I could call and contact, and they could help me out. So I reached out to Bob Springer. Bob Springer, SDS-29, SDS-38, he's also someone I call a friend. He's just one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He's one of those guys I can just walk up to, and I'm sitting there, and he goes, "Well, you know, I do the best Bob Springer impersonation of all. Well, you know, Jason, you know, I went out there the other day, and this thing happened. Blah, blah, blah." He'll start talking to him. "What about this? Oh, you don't want to go there, that's nothing. But you want to go to this thing over there?" He has these, all these great stories, right? And then you're sitting there just, and it's like hanging out with Joe in the corner, and then.
We're going to have to leave it there today, Jason Ryan, because okay. We're running out of time. But I want to let our listeners know to tune in Wednesdays at 1 o'clock for Bold Talk Business Radio. Tune in and listen for our Space Talk segments. We're going to be announcing it on our blog, boldtalkbusinessradio.com. And you can go to TNR's website, which is talknetworkradio.com, for more information. Come back and listen again.